The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the theme for today is heart and mind. Love and wisdom, we could say. The wisdom orientation of the teachings is kind of front and center in a lot of ways. I mean, the path is a path of wisdom, and that wisdom, as we understand intimately the wisdom of non-clinging, of how to engage in the world, seeing when we're pulled in a direction towards suffering, and that's something in our minds that's creating that our minds are like oriented towards greed or aversion or confusion, and that we can orient in another direction. This is part of the wisdom teachings of the Buddha. The expression of what it means to be free is to be free from greed, to be free from aversion, to be free from delusion. And so possibly not obviously connected to heart in a way. Maybe a little indirect. Another expression of what it means to have wisdom or wise view, which is the foundational teaching on the Eightfold Path, wise view. Wisdom starts us on the path. And so wisdom kind of both begins and ends the path. One expression of that wisdom is that we understand that things are impermanent, unreliable, and out of control. And so again, the surface description of these doesn't necessarily sound like or connect to how the heart opens on this journey. And yet there is the cultivation of the heart qualities on this path, of beautiful qualities of heart, of love, of compassion, of joy, of confidence, of generosity. All of those are very natural parts of the path. And this was kind of brought home to me because of this theme that we used for this retreat. The theme, on the surface of it, sounds pretty heady. The theme was transcendent dependent origination. And we picked the theme back in December because I was going on this retreat, so we wanted to kind of know what we would be doing. And so I read a little bit before my retreat. I have, of course, known about this teaching before, but I was like, okay, I'm going to give Dharma talks on this. I might be nice to reflect on it, review it. And that reflecting and reviewing before I went on the retreat had an impact on my retreat. And this is one of the ways our practice works, actually. We perhaps pick up a theme of interest in our practice. We maybe read about it, listen to Dharma talks, reflect on it, talk to friends about it. So it can kind of enter into our system through this reading, reflection, through the avenue of our cognitive ability, of our minds, of our thoughts. And so that's how I began my retreat, was with the reflecting on this teaching. And this teaching, I didn't really connect so much with how heart and mind integrated before my retreat, but that was kind of how this teaching entered into my personal practice. So this teaching on transcendent dependent origination, and I won't go through, this is not going to be a talk on transcendent dependent origination, but what I wanted to point to is that there are qualities in that path that are talked about as being the natural lawful unfolding of our practice. And this exploration, transcendent dependent origination, is a teaching that takes us right from where we are, right in the midst of how we struggle, how we suffer, and how, step by step, in a very natural way, with an orientation, the mind naturally inclines towards freedom. And along the way, naturally inclines towards beautiful qualities of heart. And so the beginning from meeting suffering, there's an understanding that suffering will either take us towards confusion, you know, that the normal perspective in our lives, and before we perhaps meet the teachings of the Buddha, certainly for me, it's like, well, if I'm suffering, it's a problem with the world, or it's something wrong with me, and I've got to fix it, I got to change it, I got to, you know, figure it out, get rid of the things that are making me unhappy, hold on to the things that are making me happy. And this normal movement, this usual habitual movement of mind, actually just takes us right back into, you know, when we are wanting something to be other than it is and acting on that, it reinforces wanting things to be other than they are. And so that's, you know, kind of a habitual response to suffering. And yet if perhaps we meet or hear, there's another way to work with suffering, what the Buddha calls the middle way, neither repressing how we are, neither repressing this urge to want things to be other than they are, nor acting on it. And even just that simple expression of the Buddha's wisdom can go a long way in our practice. That if we orient towards being aware, being mindful of, oh, wow, wanting things to be other than they are, what is that like? Oh, that hurts. You know, it doesn't feel good. Orienting, opening to that experience is a different way of responding to that urge. And that begins to take us down a different pathway, this pathway towards freedom, ultimately. And so this chain of transcendent dependent arising begins with that movement, changing our orientation towards how we relate to suffering. That begins to lead to a quality of faith in the heart. And from here, there's a kind of an unfolding, said to be very natural. The image in the text is like, if there's rain pouring down from the skies, it will, you know, land on the hills and begin to fill the nooks and crannies and little crevices, and it'll flow down from there. When those crevices and nooks and crannies fill, they overflow and it moves down and then eventually moves into the streams and then into the ponds and into the rivers and into the lakes and eventually into the ocean. That this overflowing of the rain, the water, it's a very natural movement in a particular direction. And likewise, the understanding is that with this initial movement to redirect our attention, redirect how we relate, really, how we relate to suffering, that it sets into motion this very natural unfolding. And on this path, this unfolding, teaching of transcendent dependent origination includes qualities of heart like delight, joy, and happiness, along with delight, joy, and happiness have this like kind of, you know, they are the heart qualities that are cultivated as we practice. Again, very naturally, the understanding is the heart opens, leading to delight, to joy, to happiness. And at the same time, there's this settling of the mind in tranquility, in concentration. And this leads to the deepening of understanding, of just how everything is impermanent, unreliable, out of control. I guess at a very core level, impermanent, unreliable, out of control. Certainly we have some degree of control in our lives. Like I can decide right now I want to pick up the glass, you know. So, you know, it's not like there is some measure of control. And yet, you know, at a very deep level, at a kind of core, ultimate level, between the moment when I decided to pick up the glass and the movement to pick up the glass, anything can happen. Anything can happen. I might have had a stroke, a heart attack, or perhaps a fire would have broken out in the building and we would have had to gotten up and left. So anything can happen. And so from the standpoint of the control that we have to understand that it's a kind of a middling kind of control. It's not ultimate control. So there's this interweaving in the natural unfolding of our path between how the heart opens and the mind opens to these understandings. And I think there's a real direct connection between these two, a direct connection between what we see as we choose to orient towards opening to our experience directly, immediately, as I was suggesting in the guided meditation, as we open to our experience in a direct, immediate way, what we see can deeply, deeply open our hearts. In many other teachings as well, not only this one on transcendent dependent origination, but many of the other teachings, there's also this understanding of an integration of heart and mind, the heart qualities and the mind understanding. The Buddha often talked about the Brahmaviharas, the divine abodes, as a way to cultivate the heart and mind. Love, compassion, empathetic joy, and balance of mind. In a way, we can think of this as the both as practices for our path, that we can cultivate these qualities of mind, and also as kind of a natural, perhaps, expression of the heart that is no longer gripped by wanting things to be other than they are. In the teachings, the Buddha talk about how the path unfolds. Often he began this teaching with teaching on generosity. Again, a quality of the heart. That this is a good place to orient, to begin this understanding of what it means to be caught in suffering and what it means to let go. The expression of generosity, the expression of giving, is a direct expression of letting go. And so generosity is kind of right at the very beginning. Often when he talked to lay people, he would emphasize this teaching as the doorway, as an entryway into the teachings. This quality of generosity, and this is part of, I think, what this path does for us, if we are open to it. It opens us both to how to connect with the world, how to be in community, how to have relationship with others, but also how to be in community with ourselves, how to be intimate with ourselves, how to meet and explore our own direct experience. Both sides are emphasized in the Buddha's teaching. the teachings on generosity orient towards this connection, giving gifts. We can cultivate this quality of generosity by giving. And sometimes we think we need to feel generous before we give a gift. But perhaps the Buddha emphasizes, maybe turning that around, recognizing perhaps the holding in the heart, the fear around giving, and I'm not just talking about giving money or monetary things or physical things, but giving of our time, giving of our hearts, giving of our love, that sometimes we can be contracted and fearful around that. And yet, perhaps taking an action that might be expressive of that connection can rebound on our hearts and begin to slowly open those contractions. So this is a practice. It can be a practice. Giving as an activity, as a practice, can rebound and cultivate this quality of generosity, of an open heart, of connection. And generosity is really, truly a practice of relatedness. And likewise, the teaching on ethics, the teaching on non-harming, again, a practice on relationship, on connectedness. As we kind of work both sides of the equation in our practice, both the aspect of how do we orient towards relationship, what is a skillful way to be relating to people in the world as we practice, and what is a skillful way to be relating to ourselves? A lot of our practice in the West has emphasized the inner meditative exploration and the outer, the relationship in community is also a large part of our practice. And I found in my own practice that the orientation, doing the work inwardly has been huge in my life. And partly I think because it allowed the inner fears and resistances and self-hatreds and all of the things that were blocking me from connecting. It began to allow those to soften and weaken, and there was a place or a time when it's like, oh, I no longer feel like I have to just guard myself and protect myself. So the possibility of being in relationship in this way, with love, with compassion, with generosity, with the intention of non-harming, became much more available. Some people, I think, may come in the other doorway. Minds are so different. People are so different. Some people may come in through the doorway of the orientation towards connecting with people in a wholesome way, towards expressing love, expressing kindness, expressing generosity, really working with the practices of non-harming. And that may begin to rebound and encourage them, incline them towards looking inwardly. Both sides are part of our journey, this inner journey and this outer journey. In my own practice, I found the outer, the place of exploration in relationship, is really where these qualities of heart first began to be more deeply felt. And it was, I'll tell one story. I've told this before, but it so kind of points to this juxtaposition between the inner work and the connection to the open heart. So at one point, I had a kind of a relationship that was unrequited love. I really, really liked this person, and it became clear after, a couple months of I'd met this person and we had been spending quite a bit of time together, and at some point it became clear that that person wasn't so interested. So for me, there was this feeling of wanting something that initially the movement of my mind was, this isn't appropriate. What I'm feeling for this person isn't appropriate. I need to stop feeling this. That was kind of my original thought around this unrequited love. Because it's not reciprocated, it's not appropriate. That was my thought. And so I began exploring what was going on. I don't remember how long this was, but it was weeks, if not months, of exploring this feeling of that pull to want to love someone, but really also wanting something in return. And the fear of, you know, what it meant that somebody didn't love me in return, and, you know, the sense of, you know, I'm not good enough, or I'm unworthy, or you know, things along those lines. So just opening to and being with those experiences. This is what it's like to feel this pull. This is what it's like to feel the fear. This is what it's like to feel unworthy. So just, you know, meeting that intimacy inwardly, inward intimacy. So this is the inner side of our path, inner side of our practice. Allowing rather than judging the feelings. And so exploring this, one day I was in my room and, you know, feeling the experiences, feeling the emotions, feeling the body, you know, pulled and pushed around by all of this stuff. And at some point, my mind just kind of said, "What are you afraid of?" And that was not something I consciously tried to think, but it was just like it was an expression of, "Oh, is there, maybe there's nothing to be afraid of here." And with that movement, the heart kind of let go and just allowed the feeling of loving. Without being afraid, without feeling it was inappropriate, without trying to stop it, without trying to shut it down, it allowed the love to pour out of my heart for this person. And it was so beautiful, this just wish, "Oh, I hope you're happy. I hope you be happy in your life. I hope you find what you really want in your life." Just that movement, you know, just the movement of heart to open, to wish somebody well, to wish somebody joy, safety, health. Just that opening of the heart. And, you know, what was so surprising in that moment for me was that feeling of loving was the very feeling I had been looking for, thinking I would get it from somebody else. That it was like, whoa, this feeling, this is what my heart has been looking for. It doesn't need somebody else to give it to me. It's actually independent of the conditions out there. And so this journey of the wisdom side, of being willing to look, to open, really open to this connection, this heart connection with another person. And then in turn taught me a huge lesson around how relationships can work most skillfully, perhaps, in the world. We so much want people to be something for us. And so actually a lot of our work in terms of the inner work lies in this place of exploring just these kind of push-pull movements, you know, the ways in which we feel like things aren't right. Either I'm not supposed to be this way or the world is not supposed to be this way. And to open to that. Another sutta, separate from this transcendent dependent origination sutta, kind of takes us through a path of practice, starting from this, just meet the suffering, be with it, understand it. So this is kind of the wisdom side, understand this push-pull directly in the moment. Understanding, meaning not thinking about, not trying to fix or change, but just direct, immediate, meeting of our suffering. That from that, as we directly meet that, there's a kind of a natural movement that takes us through faith, through delight, through joy, through a calming and settling of the mind, and through a unification or a concentration of mind. One of the things I like about that particular text, and I'll give you the reference, it's called The Simile of the Cloth. It's in the Middle-Length Discourses, Sutta number 7. The next step of the path in that sutta, following on meeting our experience, following on this unfolding of confidence in the path and joy and delight and tranquility and happiness and concentration, the next thing, says, very natural to arise is love, compassion, and joy. So again, bringing in this very natural unfolding of the heart, starting from just meeting experience. And so these qualities of the heart, we can open to them, we can see them as a natural result of the unfolding of the path. And we can also actively work to cultivate them. And the cultivation of these qualities has, it's kind of got two sides to it. Partly they are revealed. The more our heart lets go of this contractedness of wanting things to be different, there's a natural, can be a natural opening to love, joy, delight, as I discovered in my story. We can also directly cultivate them with active practices, as with generosity, the practice of giving, even if you're not feeling generous, or with love, the practice of actively wishing someone well, even if you don't necessarily feel that inside. There's an interesting place in some of the teachings that integrates this well-wishing and generosity. And it is said that one of the best ways to create a sense of well-wishing for someone who's difficult for you is to give them a gift. And take some thought of what might this person appreciate, and the connection in the act of giving. And if you're available for it, perhaps some joy in seeing their face light up as you offer them the gift. Creating a little avenue of connection there, opening the heart just a little bit. So we can cultivate them with active practices. You know, if you're interested in, you know, be creative around this. You know, it can be fun. I mean, one of the ways I practiced for so long around this quality of love and connection and joy was just to have a practice of smiling at people who made eye contact with me. And this was not my my normal way of being in the world. And yet, so fast, so quickly, as I would just, you know, on taking a walk or, you know, being in the grocery store, you know, just look up, meet somebody's eyes. It's not like I'm trying to make, you know, not forcing it on people. I wasn't forcing it on them. But if they made eye contact, I would just smile. You know how much you get repaid many times over? Because it's, there may have been a few times when somebody broke eye contact or didn't, like, return it, but it's like it was such a frequent response that I got a smile in return. And that just lit my heart up, to feel that connection, to feel that sense of a shared moment with an open heart. So we can find ways to cultivate this connection, connection with kindness. And then there's, you know, the maybe the indirect side of cultivating them. One is that we cultivate them by being just really willing to be present for what's in the way of these open-hearted qualities. You know, fear, confusion, anxiety, greed. Those things are kind of blocking that flow of connection. And so rather than judging them, rather than saying, I'm bad, I'm a bad person for feeling these things, opening to, oh, this is what it feels like to have that connection blocked. This is what it feels like to have that fear, that confusion. And slowly as that, those things that block it weaken and soften, the capacity or the possibility for the heart qualities to emerge happens. In my own practice, I've seen that it does take, for me at least, kind of an orientation towards the heart qualities to feel them. This is another way to explore this possibility of opening the heart, is to recognize when kindness appears. What does it feel like to recognize when compassion appears? What does it feel like to recognize generosity when it comes up for you? So opening to those qualities as they move through our mind in the day. For me, this actually took a little bit of orienting to the possibility that they would be there. It was almost like my mind had this, you know, filter or something of heart stuff. Nope, don't go there. And so it took this kind of looking at the side of my eyes. It's like, well, you know, things feel pretty calm right now. You know, might there be some joy? Might there be some love here? So sometimes we have to actually, you know, open to the possibility. You know, and one of the key teachings I got at a certain point in my practice was, you know, I described this situation to a teacher friend of mine, saying, you know, I have a lot of experience of just being really settled in my you know, things. I'm not reacting to very much, and I'm told that, like, you know, heart stuff is supposed to come, but, you know, I'm not really feeling it. And that person said, you're orienting towards, what he said was, you're orienting towards emptiness. You're orienting towards wisdom. He said, when you're feeling calm, feeling at ease, feeling non-reactive, orient towards relationship. Connect with the person you're with. As you're feeling that, reflect, you know, it's almost like reflect on how they might be feeling. So it's like an orientation to relationship. It was stunning to me how quickly that allowed the feelings to be felt. Within the next person, after I'd had that conversation, the next person I talked to, like, all of this feeling of, like, love and compassion and joy with what I was like, wow, I had no idea this was possible. It's just like a little pointer open to the relationship. And so our path unfolds with both, with the inner work and the outer work. I'll just say this one last piece. This was another teaching on my retreat, kind of integrating these two sides of things, the wisdom and the love, oriented through connection, through relationship again. And one of the wisdom teachings of the Buddha has to do with what the Buddha calls cultivating the perception of impermanence. You know, things are impermanent, and yet often our minds, you know, just gloss right over that and create this illusion that there's a sense of things having stability, of being stable and permanent in some way. Even though we know it, even though we know it in our minds, yes, I am going to die, you know, we don't actually live that way. We don't actually take in the deeper meaning of that. And so reflecting on impermanence, cultivating the perception of impermanence from the perspective of just reflecting on how things change, and to keep in mind that we are of the nature, you know, our bodies are of the nature to grow old, to get sick, to die. This is not a mistake. It's the way life is put together. And so to reflect on this, to reflect on this. And so on my retreat, on this walk up the volcano each day, I got very familiar with the, you know, the surroundings, the road. And one day I was, you know, walking up this hill, and maybe 50-100 feet away, I saw kind of a dark spot on the road. And I thought, I don't remember there being a pothole in that area. Then it occurred to me, well, maybe it's not a pothole, you know. And it as I walked up to it, I saw it was something on the road. And then as I got even closer to it, I saw that it was a frog that had been struck by a car. And this had just happened, at least from my seeing the frog. And I made myself really look at the frog. It was very disturbing. There was a lot of blood. There was, the organs of the frog had come out of its body. And I knew it had just happened because there were no flies yet on any of the body parts. And I made myself, you know, look at this and reminding myself, you know, it's like this frog, like, you know, minutes ago was alive. Just minutes ago. It was leaping across the road at just the wrong moment for that frog getting struck. I made myself reflect, this might be me. I might not even make it to the top of the hill. You know, who knows? Those roads were really narrow, really windy. I had to be pretty careful as I walked to be sure I could see, you know, there was whether there was a car there or not. And sometimes people would drive really fast on these little tiny roads. So, you know, this might be me lying there on the road. This, it's humbling. And yet, you know, this doesn't have to be depressing. It doesn't have to be depressing. It's painful to see something like that. And yet, if we can see it without the contraction, we can have more of a sense of compassion. You know, it's like, you know, I wished the frog a little blessing. And I looked around to see if there was something that I could move it off the road to keep it from getting further run over. And in the immediate vicinity, I didn't see anything. And so I continued up my hill. But at the top of the hill, there were some eucalyptus trees, and so there was some bark on the ground. And I picked up a couple pieces of bark to take down with me and move it to the side. And again, did a little, you know, kind of blessing to the frog. And just reminding myself, this is of the nature of life. One moment, we're alive. One moment, we're not. So taking that in can create a contraction, and it also can create an opening of the heart. This quote in the Dhammapada. This will be a paraphrase because I don't remember it exactly, but something along the lines of, few people realize that we all must die. For those who do realize this, quarrels cease. What's the purpose of quarrels when in any moment life could end? So whichever doorways you enter the practice, the very natural unfolding of both wisdom and compassion, wisdom and love, if we're available to learn the lessons. So that's enough for me, I think. Any comments or thoughts or questions? Is it on?
Well, there are many things that I heard today, but what I discovered partly is that there's judgment in so much of my thought, not only of the others, of myself. So it never is just towards the others. And I have one relationship that's troubling for me, and I spend a lot of time with this person. And I know it's a hindrance on my path, there's no question. I can't see the impermanence of this.
So partly the exploration is, judging feels like this. What happens, you know, the judging thoughts are one aspect of it. And it kind of rebounds on our system with, you know, some tightening, some holding up like, well, I'm not like that, or but I am like this, or and this person's like that, and, you know, we create these, like, boundaries. And what does that feel like? I mean, it's not a connected feeling. It's a protected, defensive feeling. And that is partly what we're being asked to open to. You know, it's like you've seen, I think, pretty clearly. It's like the side of the suffering of it. I mean, in your voice, I hear that you have experienced that this is not helpful.
I know it's not helpful,
and yet, you know, it's not like you can just say, knowing it's not helpful. You know, if we had control of our minds, we would say, "Well, oh, I see this isn't helpful. Why don't I stop doing that?" Our minds are not in our control in this very fundamental way. And yet there is the possibility neither of repressing the judgment nor expressing it by acting on it. Just, oh, this is what it feels like. This is the suffering of judgment. And you know, it sounds so counterintuitive. You know, how would that work anyway? You know, we feel into the suffering of judgment. But my understanding of how this works is like, just as we feel into the suffering of something like judgment, our hearts gets more deeply, our heart understands more deeply how this is not helpful, not only to the other person, but to ourselves. And so the heart is getting information about, this is not the way to well-being for this organism. This is not the way to well-being. And so over and over, it's like over and over again, we have to get this lesson. You know, and you've gotten it to some extent to see, oh, this is not helpful. You know, I've worked for years on certain patterns, you know. You know, just, oh, right, here it is again. Oh, here it is again. And to just, oh, impatience. Oh, right, here it is again. And very, you know, the gradual transformation. We're kind of impatient, you know, we're kind of impatient. We think, oh, I've seen how this isn't helpful. Okay, once is enough. I should be able to fix this now. Our hearts aren't that easily shifted from their ruts. You know, there's a kind of a gradual wearing away of these patterns. And this is inspiring to me. You know, the Buddha has described practice as being like, you know, gradual path, a gradual wearing away. You know, he used an analogy of a rope from a shipwreck that's like rotting on the seashore. Every day, a little bit of that rope is rotted away by the sun, the sand, the wind, the water. But each day, you don't see much difference. But come back a year later, and it's falling apart. So much of practice has that quality. The willingness to over and over, ah, here it is again. And not here it is again. Ah, here it is. Another opportunity to be with it.
Thank you, I think.
And something that can help in this, you know, look back. You know, you've been practicing for a while. You know, look back. Over the course of 3 years, 5 years, 10 years of practice, we generally see how some of the letting go is expressing itself now. No longer quite so reactive. Able to not follow through on that thought that comes up, that judgmental, not having to speak it out. So we can see, looking over the course of years, that there have been things released, have been things let go of. And, you know, in this teaching on transcendent dependent origination, this is actually pointed to that it's helpful to know and recognize what things have been released. Using reflection, at times we have to recognize this through thinking back. Oh, yes. Well, there still is all of this stuff. There still is judgment. And yet, look at all of the ways in which there has been a shift. That really supports us to have the inspiration to see it again.
I think it's called mindfulness.
It is. Anything else? Anyone else? Okay, let's just sit for a moment. My clock says 10:58, but that one says 11, so we'll split the difference. Sit for just a minute. Seeing if you can orient or recognize this place of inner and outer connection inwardly with intimacy and open-heartedness. maybe you can't feel it, but just leaving the space that maybe. Thank you.